If one is to conquer the galaxy, one needs soldiers to do so. The galaxy is, however, a dangerous and deadly place, ill-suited for human life. Unsympathetic environments, vicious and predatory Xenos, and horrors from an alternate unreality all oppose humanity's destiny as rulers of the stars. To combat superior threats, one needs superior soldiers. Know then that this is a record of the creation of the Legion as Astartes, the finest warriors in history, humanity's champions, and its destroyers. As detailed in previous records, the Legion as Astartes were first created in the terrible crucible of Terra's Unification Wars. Genetically enhanced transhumans, the Astartes were the successors of the crude but effective Thunder Warriors that served the Emperor during the conquest of Terra. Heirs to this genetic legacy, the Astartes were superior to their predecessors in almost every way. The Thunder Warriors, while supposedly stronger and more resilient than an individual Astartes, were unstable butchers instead of soldiers. Their successors were submitted to not only genetic modification, but also to psychological conditioning and rigorous training, allowing them to operate at a level of iron discipline and tactical coherence that their Thunder Warrior predecessors could never have achieved. A Legion of Astartes represents the most fearsome collection of military force in the history of the galaxy. All of its members individually outstrip in capability a mortal soldier by an almost absurd degree. They are stronger, faster, more resilient, more disciplined, and more dedicated than any soldier in the Imperium, and, organized into legions of tens of thousands, form a force that can best any opponent they face. The origin and crux of the success of the Astartes legions lies in the Emperor's Primarch project. Knowing full well that the Thunder Warriors were a means to a very brief end, the Emperor had, even before their creation, begun planning to render them ultimately obsolete. Knowing that he was but one being, however powerful, the Emperor was aware that he alone could not conquer the galaxy. Deep in his hidden laboratories, the Master of Mankind created 20 superhuman beings to be his lieutenants. These Primarchs, entities of powers and skills beyond that of any human, even an Astartes, would be second only to the Emperor in the future Imperium's war machine. Crafted from the Emperor's own chromosomal makeup, the Primarchs would in turn function as genetic progenitors for 20 legions of Space Marines. This genomic template, from which all Astartes augmentations would be derived, is the key to their genetic stability and thus inherent to their superiority over all Genhan soldiers that had come before them. Through the Primarchs, Astartes' creation could be streamlined and refined, allowing for stable mass production. However, as the project was approaching fruition, the malign intelligences from the warp made their move. Seeing the Emperor for what he was, a threat to their ultimate and unknowable goals, they tore open reality and scattered the 20 infant Primarchs from Terra to the far corners of the galaxy, hoping to place them beyond the Emperor's reach. Each would come to maturity on his own, isolated from his genetic precursor and without his guidance. This was a setback. Catastrophic, yes, but not ultimately fatal. The Emperor had what he needed to create his legions, the genetic stock or gene seed of his Primarchs, and while he would be deprived of their use as commanders in the field, he could still form the greatest army the galaxy had ever known. From the 20 Primarchs, 20 legions were fashioned, each molded by their primogenitor's genetic legacy in ways sometimes subtle, sometimes obvious, in both appearance and psychological character. The initiation process of an Astartes begins early in human adolescence, identified as being the period in the human lifespan most receptive to the extreme strains of genetic augmentation, psychological restructuring, and invasive surgical manipulation the process necessitates. The lower rates of rejection, the more chance the aspiring candidate has to proceed to the next stage. The process is dependent on the natural biological and hormonal structure of the human male, thus only males can be Astartes. While the psychological work is undertaken in tandem with the entire process, the surgical enhancements occur in a distinct order, as follows. First, the second heart, a simple enhancement but incredibly vital for the improvements in cardiovascular performance it grants. The osmodula, an organ that secretes hormones to boost the size and structure and density of the skeleton. An example of its effect is the fusion after 2 years of the subject's ribcage into highly resistant bone plates. The biscopea increases muscular growth and density. The haemastomen both increases the ability of the blood to carry oxygen and monitors the stability of the previous two implants. Larimin's organ distributes Larimin cells into the bloodstream in the event of an open wound, causing the production of near instantaneous scar tissue. The catalepsian node allows the subject to cycle what areas of the brain are functioning asleep, reducing the need for full sleep to a minimum. The successful implantation of this organ marks the beginning of the Marine's hypnotic conditioning. The preomnor, functionally, is a decontamination organ for foodstuffs entering the stomach. It allows the subject to consume poisonous and dangerous foods with impunity. The omophagia absorbs and processes memetic information from ingested genetic material, allowing the subject to effectively glean information by eating. Stage 9, the multilung, allows for the breathing of toxic atmospheres, while stage 10, the oculobe, permits enhancement of the optic nerves. Lyman's ear renders the subject immune to vertigo or dizziness and enhances aural capability and sensitivity. The Sous-An membrane, through subsequent genetic therapy and mental training, allows the subject to activate the cerebral membrane to induce a state of suspended animation, preserving himself in the event of extreme trauma. The melanochromic organ monitors atmospheric radiation levels and adjusts the level of melanin in the skin to compensate. The otolytic kidney dramatically enhances the rate of blood detoxification, while the neuroglottis allows the subject to detect poisons or toxins in food simply by taste. The mucronoid allows for the voluntary secretion of a skin-coating substance to protect against extremes of temperature. Boettcher's gland is actually a pair of glands that allows the subject to spit or salivate a corrosive poison from within their mouth. The progenoid glands are perhaps one of the most important of the augmentations a marine has. They allow for the absorption of genetic information from the subject's body and mature it into active gene seed, which, once extracted, can be used for the development of organs for later generations of Legion soldiers. Finally, the black carapace is subdermal armor that forms plates over bones and vital organs. A later neural web developed by this augmentation provides a direct neural interface between the subject and Astarte's power armor. The space marine that is created from this process loses a large part of his humanity, but gains vastly enhanced strength, speed, reflexes, and abilities utterly beyond that of even the finest human soldier. Additionally, the cellular decay of the aging process is entirely halted, which, in combination with their enhanced defenses against poisons and toxins, renders them functionally immortal. There has never been a recorded instance of an Astartes dying of old age. Lives of eternal war claimed them long before this. Terra was the first recruiting ground for the proto-legions. Aspirants ranged from conscripts to volunteers, but their decision, or lack thereof, to enter legion service mattered not, for such was the psychosomatic reconditioning an Astartes would undergo that their lives before their transhuman ascension would often become a dull blur of ill-formed memory haze. Thanks to this, the early legions were not restricted to from where or who they could recruit, something of a boon given the riven and degraded state of the human communities on the homeworld. Whether willing or not, a man could be turned from a simple techno-barbarian or hive serf into a tool of the imperial will. Terra, and its history and culture, was the foundation upon which the legions were built, and informed a lot of the early character of each. While certain legions possessed minor to moderate physical or genetic discrepancies, the results of a particular dominant gene strain or other from their Primarch's genetic code, all were at this point in history largely uniform in both disposition and character, divided only by their legion's numerical designations and, occasionally, roles within the early Imperium's war machine. As the Great Crusade expanded beyond the bounds of the Sol system and casualties began to mount, new human stock was folded into the Legion's drafting apparatuses. While these new recruits brought with them the cultural histories of worlds only recently reunited with greater humanity, Terrans would remain as the foremost members of each Legion until, in every case, that Legion's reuniting with its Primarch. These beings, in their separation from the Emperor, had almost all developed to be rulers of their own homeworlds, and in turn, been shaped by those worlds. When such a reunion occurred, the reconquered or newly sworn planet or planets the Primarch claimed as their dominion were rendered unto the Legion as a fief from where the Legion would draw the bulk of its manpower requirements. Such reunifications brought about dramatic changes in not only Legion culture and iconography, but in some cases tactics, organization, structure, and even language. Traditions of these new fief worlds, brought in not only by the thousands of new recruits, but the Primarchs themselves, profoundly altered the Terran-based armies, diluting or replacing structures adhered to since the Unification Wars. In the cases of the 4th Legion Iron Warriors, 7th Legion Imperial Fists, and 13th Legion Ultramarines, these changes were marginal, while in the case of the 5th Legion White Scars and 6th Legion Space Wolves, nothing of the early Crusade forces' structure or culture survived contact with the Primarch. Whereas the legions that fought for solar reconquest were united in a brotherhood born of a shared homeworld and a cohesive, singular ideology, by the middle of the Great Crusade's second century, each of the surviving 18 legions was as different from the other as night is today, fueling rivalries and occasionally prompting deep feuds. While these early seeds of discourse would undoubtedly play their role in later cataclysms, it cannot be denied that the changes wrought on the legions during this period created fighting forces uniquely suited, in their own forms, to almost every enemy and every theater of war in the galaxy. Legion structure was, initially, organized much like the Thunder Warrior regiments had been, based along the patterns laid down by the ancient Roma work, the Principia Bellicosa, as well as what fragments remained of Crom's new work. The Emperor was to add, as he often did, his own genius to the works, but the fundamentals were only reworked when needed to accommodate the range of abilities the transhuman Astartes possessed. In keeping with the Principia, the chain of command was unpretentious and almost blunt. Serving under a meritocracy from the beginning, Legion officers led their Astartes from the front lines, ensuring not only that their talents were best utilized in the most direct way possible, but that the soldiers under their command would have examples of exemplary war-making and leadership. By the strict adherence to the Principia Bellicosa, Legion structure would flow from a command echelon to the chapter, composing of roughly 1,000 legionnaires, to the battalion, nominally containing 5 companies of 100 legionnaires, as well as attendant specialist units and support cadres. As the crusade went on, operational strictures would often force changes, whether due to a surplus or dearth of new recruits, or simply unforeseen external demands placed upon Legion command, requiring the reorganization of who commanded whom. This would change further when the Legion encountered its Primarch. By the end of the 2nd century of the Great Crusade, chapters were referred in some legions as millennials, harrows, or great companies, while battalions could be regiments or cohorts. Some legions would vastly exceed the prescribed 10 chapters, while many others would have chapters composing of more battalions than the regular 5. Variations penetrated every level of the command structure, too. Each legion had its own title for its officers. The Lord Commander of a chapter may be known as a chapter master, as in the case of the 13th Legion, or a Khan, as in the case of the 5th. A battalion's lieutenant commander may be known as a legate or a shadow captain, and their subordinate company captain may have been a centurion or a wolf lord. The Principia Bellicosa were guidelines, not imperial law, and the deviations from them were tolerated or even welcomed by the Emperor and the War Council in the name of the results they produced. Each of the 18 legions came from the same beginnings, the same crucible. In many ways, this makes the subsequent fall of half of their number all the more tragic. They evolved each in their own fashion into mirrors of humanity's myriad aspects. Some mirrored our greatest hopes, while others our darkest tendencies. Perhaps in chronicling each of their tales, can we glean some meaning from the horrors that were to follow.